Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And, of course, thanks for sitting around the kitchen table with us today. I'd like to welcome our executive producer, Miss Shelley York. How are you doing today?
I am doing very well. How are you?
I was looking for a little chill in there as we get toward the end of September here, but I'm not seeing it yet.
Well, there's a little difference. There's a little difference.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had my thermostat get its usual 68 yesterday.
It's a little cooler today.
Yeah, I was thinking about calling the help in to stack the logs in my fireplace. I'll call the help in, you know. Across the glass wall, of course, our engineer keeping us all balanced out there, a music dynamic. I love your music, Dean. Dean Slama, how are you doing?
Thanks, Jeff. I'm doing great. You say it's still hot?
Yeah, it's still
cooling
hot.
Off.
Yeah, here we are. I call this the end of September. I mean, it's almost Christmas. You know, it's almost Christmas. Exactly. Yeah, right. Look, when I start brining the Thanksgiving hams, it's Christmas.
Mm-hmm. You're brining.
Yeah, I'm brining the Thanksgiving hams. Of course I am.
Absolutely. Right around the corner.
Anyway, so nice to have all of you here. No use talking about the future when we have so much in the present here today. Anyway, you're doing all right?
I am. You see, I brought you a little gift.
Yeah, a little box right there. What is that?
It's a little box of truffles.
Oh, ooh. Man, I love chocolate. I tell you what,
I
love them.
Little chocolate truffles. How about that?
That's what I like a lot. Where do you go to pick up chocolate truffles?
You don't need to worry about who gave them to me. I mean, where I got them. And all that's important is that I'm sharing. But I know you probably would rather another kind of truffle.
Well, I mean,
the ones I brought you are not quite so expensive. But it's kind of funny because a lot of people do confuse the chocolate truffle and the truffle that's the mushroom.
Get us out of confusion here. Is in that box the truffles I want or the truffles I'm getting? Which one is it?
Chocolate truffles. You're getting chocolate truffles today.
You know, she had me excited. She had me excited. But you're right. Until sometime recently, I mean, it wasn't as easy to get a good truffle as it was to get the ones you have in that little box right there. Truffles I want. You had to go to Europe and you had to pay, you know, this huge cost for these little bitty mushrooms that made even the rich cringe a little bit.
What? They still kind of cringe.
Well, it depends. It depends, you know. Anyway, the truffle I'm talking about, y'all, is what I really want to talk about today, but thank you for that little box of chocolate.
Well, you're welcome.
I like that, too. We're going to bust that up in a little bit. Anyway, yeah, these beautiful truffles that I'm talking about goes, you know, way back many years. In fact, to the 4th century B.C., I learned the other day, where its origin is still surrounded in mystery. They were thought to have therapeutic qualities. They were eaten in order to bring, you know, health to the body and soul. Ancient philosophers like Cicero, you know, had theories that the elusive truffle's appearance was the result, he thought, of like a lightning strike on Earth, and as a result of thunder and rain and the warmth of the soil. That's kind of romantic sound.
That is.
And Cicero was fairly smart, you know.
Absolutely. Another of those great thinkers did get it right, though, and that was Dioscorides. He recognized that the truffles were actually tuberous roots. In fact, the origin of the word truffle is from the Latin word tuber, which means outgrowth or lump, which is pretty much what a truffle looks like, a lump of dried dirt.
It does, actually. I mean, people actually walk through the restaurant, we got a basket of truffles waiting, coming in, unpacking, and they say, well, what is that right there? You want me to throw that away? I said, no. So you're right, it does look like dirt.
It does. They're part of the mushroom family, a fungus that grows around the roots of trees and can be found buried between leaf litter and soil. Even that sounds romantic.
You know what I like most about it is how they're found. I remember the first time I took a trip to Italy and had an opportunity to look at this. It was fascinating. They're not found easily by man. And in fact, it takes a pig. Now, I want you to listen to this. It takes a pig or a trained dog, which they're doing now. The truffle dogs are very expensive dogs, to forage for truffles because truffles are buried underground. As you know, pigs have this innate ability to kind of sniff the truffles, whereas dogs need to be trained. I mean, they're trained to go for the smell. The pigs go for smell too, but they just kind of know for some reason because they're rooters, you know, they like to root. Whereas dogs, you know, they sniff out game and all of that. But the downside of using pigs is that once they find a truffle, you know what they want to do. They want to hurry up and eat it. That's the only reason they find. So they kind of got to put a little muzzle on them and all of this. But it's very interesting to see how just this innate characteristic of pigs and dogs to be able to find these buried mushrooms.
Well, and buried treasure. And they can be very costly, and a very costly meal if the pig decides to pig out, so to speak. Some truffles sell for thousands of dollars per pound.
Huh, I guess so.
Did you know that in the Middle Ages, truffles were considered by the church to be the creation of the devil? They were known as witches' fare, and few people ate or sold them. We all know what they did to witches back then, right? But truffles made a big comeback in the Renaissance through the reign of Louis XIV.
Naturally. Louis knew how to eat.
He did, and he loved them so much that he tried to cultivate truffles, which unfortunately was unsuccessful. And so thereby proving that even a king can't make a truffle appear.
Well, by the mid-1800s, over 2,000 tons, if you can imagine, of truffles started to appear all throughout Europe. But during World War I, when much of the countryside of Europe was destroyed, truffles again disappeared. And there was this great search for truffles during that time. In the 1960s, production was less, if you can believe this, 400 tons. So it went from like 2,000 tons in 1800 to 400 tons in the 1960s. But production, I'm happy to say, is on the rise again. Most truffles come from Italy and France, where truffle aficionados will tell you that the white truffle and the black truffle, obviously, are the most valued.
I didn't know there were any other colors.
Oh, of course. There's the pink. There's the brown. The Chinese have a lot of truffles right now that are kind of mixed color.
I'm just spoiled, I guess.
Yeah, you're spoiled. Anyway, the Piedmont region of northern Italy in the hills of Tuscany produced the beautiful white truffles where they grow in association with the oak trees and sometimes beech and hazel. Hazel is really the tree you're looking for. The pigs know a hazel tree. The summer truffle is a black truffle that also grows in Italy. So, you know, a couple of nice truffles right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the black Perigord truffle grown in France that's the prize.
In fact, the sauce made with the black truffle is called Perigordin.
And this truffle is sometimes referred to as the black diamond.
Always.
In this region, they share a perfect relationship with the oak and hazelnut trees. A few black truffles come from areas of Italy, Croatia, Spain, even Slovenia. But 45% of them come from the Perigord region in France.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the French chefs, let me tell you right now, they, as they always do, they claim and pay homage to those Perigord truffles. In their mind, everything else is just a substitute. Well, you know, for food fanatics and chefs in very high-end restaurants, the Perigord has the most desirable aroma of all the truffles. It's been described as smelling, now this is kind of strange when I think about this, but it's like smelling, you know, earth or like the forest floor, and hunters know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. As you walk through and there's kind of the wood that's decomposing and the leaves, it kind of has this earthy aroma to it. And some people might call it a funk, you know what I mean, Michelle?
Well, I do know what you mean, because I can remember my first introduction to truffles, because, you know, you think truffle and that sounds so fun and elegant and blah, blah, blah. We were having breakfast one day in Rhode Island, and we were with Chef Steve Zucker, and he was sitting next to me. And so, I don't know, I ordered truffled eggs, and it was probably at his suggestion. And when the meal came, you know, you could smell one of these dishes. I mean, you know, and it was a very pungent aroma.
So in other words, you thought it was stinking.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I hope that isn't mine. I hope that's not mine. I hope that's not mine. And it was.
Yeah.
You might call it a funk, but the truffle adds this mushroominess, I'm going to call it, to a dish. And it goes, truffles go a long, long way, especially if they're perfect, you know. It has this indescribable aroma. You know what it is. You know it's earthy. You know it's woodsy. You know it's mushroomy, but only a truffle smells like a truffle.
That's right.
The truffle can sell at retail for about almost $2,000 a pound.
That's amazing.
Now, the white truffle during white truffle season is more. I mean, this is inexpensive at this point. So, yeah, about $2,000 a pound. But, of course, they're the best when picked fresh. So getting them from Europe has always been kind of an issue with the great American chefs who came from Europe to America. It's like, oh, my God, these truffles are old and and they've been dried out and this and that and other. So there's always been a little issue about that.
There is hope, though, for more accessibility in the States, because scientists, agriculturists, farmers, truffle lovers have all been working together to kind of unlock the secrets to the growth pattern of truffles so that they can be farmed. So,
well, and not only that, it's been happening for lucky farmers. You know, it's like striking oil on the property, which they are doing now. And some of the oak trees of Louisiana does have truffles. And
I'm going to go truffle hunting. You know, I wonder if cats can sniff
them. Why don't you bring
out
that cat? Huh? See, dogs and pigs, these are work animals. Well, you see a cat, you know what a cat does, right? Just sit on the back of the sofa and say, pet me.
Yeah, right.
Pet me. That is not looking for a truffle, I'm going to tell you right now.
Hey, I have to tell you, Salama, you know, I have a confession. We were doing a conference in New York City well over a decade ago, and it was a fairly large group of us that went to dinner before the conference got started.
Right.
Just
uh-huh.
A little Italian restaurant, no big deal. You know,
I remember it well.
Yeah.
Like, John Arena was there.
That's right. You're thinking spaghetti and meatballs, you know.
Okay, yeah.
Big group. Well, the waiter came around asking if you wanted what I thought was cheese, okay? It was white.
And white truffle, like she's talking.
It was white truffles, and we didn't know the difference.
No, excuse me. We knew the difference. Don't throw us in the heat. And when you look at white truffles and think it's cheese, don't say we.
Well, I know better now, but I didn't know better then. Nor did my companions, and everybody got white truffles. And when the bill came...
Oh, it wasn't all included.
Oh, my God.
That was a $2,000 add-on to the bill for the white truffles she had on her veal.
No, it wasn't.
Not you alone, but
not
everybody
alone.
At the table. And I saw the waiter scraping all, running through a truffle cutter, these white truffles. And so I said, more, you know, like, give me more Parmesan cheese, I guess they were thinking. And the waiter had this big smile on his face, and the bill came to the table. Truffle add-on, $2,000 US.
Ooh.
I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Yeah, I won't either.
John Arena, who was with us that day, John Arena, one of my great friends from Italy, who's a big truffle fan and knowledgeable in truffle hunting, told the maitre d' on the way out of the door, he says, in a little town I come from in Italy, Amato, in the southern region, the thieves stand on the outside of the restaurant to knock you on the head as you walk out and take your wallet. He says, here tonight, the thieves on the inside. I'll never forget. Anyway, Michelle, we have a great guest going to talk to us about truffles. So, y'all, we're going to be back in just a second.
Here I am in this dang bed, who's going to feed them hoes?
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
We'll travel back nearly 1,000 years in time to hear music by mystics and medieval holy men whose manuscripts have found a new voice today. They include the sacred chants of Hildegard von Bingen and excerpts from the Inchcolm Antiphoner written on a tiny Scottish island in the 13th century. William Jackson and Davy Spillan feature in our music on the Thistle and Shamrock. Hope you'll join us.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we have Victor Wainwright at the 2012 Memphis in May Bill Street Music Festival. The set was so good, we're going to spend the entire Bill Street Caravan show there. We'll also continue our feature host segment, Heavenly Sight, A Vision Out of Blindness, from Artemis Media and Murray Street Productions. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
A fungus among us. There was a rumble in the jungle. There was a static in the attic, a moaning and a groaning, a fungus among us. We had a fight in the middle of the night. There was a fungus among us.
started to fight. I couldn't understand what it caused it all, but nevertheless, so we were having a ball. There was a fungus among us.
Which one is the fungus?
There was a fungus.
I don't know where you get this music from, Slama.
That's a classic.
That's a classic. You're right. Anyway, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting and culture show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you with us today. And, of course, Slama is in charge of the music library here. And every show he tries to tie it into the topic, and I don't know where, Michelle, he finds it.
He does a great job tying it in.
Yeah, he does. Anyway, we have a great topic we're talking about today, one of our favorite subjects, of course, and that is truffles and all of the flavors associated with the different varieties, and even the fact that America does have access to great truffles, and even organizations like, well, I'll mention one in a minute, that's growing its own truffles up in Tennessee. So, Michelle, introduce our guest.
Oh, I'd be happy to. We have Kevin Patterson with us today. Along with his brother Tom, they co-own Wild Purveyors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. These brothers grew up with outdoors, and as kids, they did a lot of camping and fishing, learning about the wild, which brought Tom to an interest in horticulture and foraging. Now, Kevin's professional path took him toward the finance industry, but, you know, he couldn't get away from his love of the outdoors. So the two of them pooled their knowledge and began Wild Purveyors. Kevin and his brother source from 80 sustainable and certified organic Pennsylvania farmers to bring artisan cheeses to the market, pastured in free-range, additive-free meats, or certified organic heirloom produce, and exotic wild edibles to the restaurants and markets of Western Pennsylvania. Now, when they discovered the availability of truffles in southern Appalachia, they kind of bent their rule of sourcing only from local merchants and decided to offer them to their customers. It was a decision that I'm sure they're very happy that they made. And today we do have with us Kevin. We're so pleased to have you with us on the show to talk about truffles.
Thank you. Hello.
Now, Kevin, when I said, you know, kind of broke your rule, truffles really aren't that prominent in the United States. So they're still kind of local,
aren't
they?
No, and actually the truffle that most people are familiar with, the black Perigord truffle or the tuber melanosporum variety, is native to southern France. And as some people have found in the southern Appalachians, it can be cultivated. So where we did break one of our rules in how we source things, we kind of didn't in a way as well. We discovered, you know, we're sourcing the most local truffle. It's not like this truffle grows everywhere and we've gone outside of our region and gone further than where we could get it, you know, more locally. We're getting it from the most local place that we can, which is the southern Appalachian.
Absolutely.
Now, tell us a little bit, just so our audience has a nice outreach and is always people tuning in to us as they're driving across the South here. Tell us a little bit about Wild Purveyors, the extent of your items that you sell, a little bit about the foraging, etc.
Sure. So it all really got started, as Michelle mentioned earlier, when Tom graduated from Penn State. I was working in the finance industry, and it was the summertime. He had just gotten out. He was really excited about finding wild mushrooms. And he called me, and I was sitting in my office. You know, he's like, do you want to go out in the woods and find some wild mushrooms with me? And it was like the most exciting thing that I had heard, you know, in a long time. So I said, sure, let's go and do it. And we started doing that, and we started finding some different wild mushrooms. It was chanterelle season when we started doing that, and we would take them home and cook some nice meals. And the following season, we found about 100 pounds of chanterelles in a two-day period.
Wow.
And I called some of the people that I knew that were working in the restaurant industry, and we had sold all of them in the next 2 days. So that was kind of the start of Wild Purveyors. We did it seasonally, weekends, evenings, for about 8 years before we formed Wild Purveyors in 2009 and registered with the state of Pennsylvania. And at that time, we were doing the wild edibles and sourcing from local farms, sourcing produce. And the chefs that we worked with, they were always asking for different things. Can you get us some of this? Can you get us some of that? And through that, those relationships really drove the direction that Wild Purveyors went. As you mentioned, we work with about 80 different farms around PA, a good number of those are artisan creameries that make really fantastic European quality cheese. In addition to that, we do the certified organic, all Pennsylvania grown produce. A lot of it is heirloom, really beautiful stuff, and work with a ton of different farms that produce some really exceptional meats. We have a couple of farms that we're working with that are raising exclusively for us pork, some really fantastic pork. Actually, a Hereford breed, same as the cow, and actually looks like the cow, but it is big.
Wow.
So we've branched out into a lot of different areas, but always with the focus on, you know, really exceptional quality. And I think that came about from, you know, our origins with working with wild mushrooms. And obviously a lot of wild mushrooms, like the black truffle, which the ones that we get in the United States, those are cultivated, but all of the black truffles, the black Perigord truffles that are sourced from Europe, those are all wild. And that may not, you know, that may not be something that people really realize, but that's all wild fungus.
Sure.
So, you know, starting out that way, you know, we just kind of gravitated towards more specialty foods, more, you know, really exceptional quality in one way or the other, whether it's heirloom, you know, pastured meats, the farmstead artisan cheeses, and all the while going with the foraging, we've started to get into more and more different varieties that we would see in the past. But, you know, basically, you know, we've been doing this for almost 15 years now, so we've picked up a lot of different varieties. We forage for black trumpets, which are sometimes referred to as the poor man's truffle. They have a really intense umami flavor. You know, that flavor that you really can't describe in a few words. It takes a lot of words to actually describe what that flavor is. But
I absolutely love that. We're in chanterelle. I'm going to call it chanterelle season here in Louisiana as well, with these rainy kind of afternoons. And normally as we get into the fall, early fall, we start to see a tremendous amount of the chanterelles and and obviously the oyster mushrooms and things like that here. But do y'all actually, now I know you have obviously a storefront. Do you have a marketplace? How do people access your product?
So, starting out, you know, we worked exclusively with restaurants. Through doing that, with the local foods movement and, you know, a lot of the chefs that we work with, that's just, they want people to know where they're getting things from. They started listing us on their menu. And we started getting really an extraordinary number of calls and emails on a daily basis, you know, people requesting, asking if they could come and buy stuff directly from us. And at the time, we didn't have anywhere that we could really feasibly do that. We took a booth at a local market here in Pittsburgh and did that for a while, and until we realized that, you know, there was more opportunity to it, and that we could have our own store. So now we have a market at 5308 Butler Street in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a section of the city known as Lawrenceville.
Right, right, sure.
And it's an area that's going through regentrification. It was kind of run down for a while, and now it's really being built back up by the local community. And there's a lot of restaurants, vibrant art scene. It's really a perfect place for us, and it's just outside of the city, or just outside of the city center, and really close to the expressways, for us to be able to get in and out of the city quickly and get on the highway to go to the farms that we work with. So
now, the relationships you build with the farmers out there, because obviously you have a wide range of possibilities in the rural areas of western Pennsylvania, do you actually contract the farmers, or do you just search out seasonally what is best in different places? How are you accessing your product from these farms? What are the relationships?
It's kind of a mix of both these days. You know, at first we were really kind of gleaning from the local agricultural community, you know, just kind of like developing relationships by buying what was surplus. Because most of the, you know, typically farmers have a business plan that is structured towards either farmers markets, or they have what's known as a CSA, or community supported agricultural system. So, you know, but through both of those, it's very difficult to grow exactly what you need.
Sure.
And exactly what the market will bear, you know. So there's usually a surplus, and that's kind of how we got started. These days, though, through working with some of the farms where, I mean, we, you know, we're a huge part of that business plan for them now. You know, we take a tremendous amount of the product that they do produce, so we do some contracts these days as well where people grow, raise, or produce products specifically for us. And with the wild mushrooms and chanterelles that you mentioned earlier, we actually have a dairy that makes a chanterelle cheese for us. Mm. And it's really fantastic. It turned out better than we ever could have hoped. It's really unique.
Well, that sounds fantastic.
What about, do you ship product as, say, companies like, I'll mention one in particular, like Farmer Jones up in the Northeast, who ships all over the United States, or do you try to stay within that region feeding that Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania market, or where's the product going?
So that has been what we do for, you know, from day one. We find the best products in our area and distribute it to restaurants and markets locally. We have started to, through doing this, because I guess it is, you know, we've always done this because we love it. I mean, it's just something that really, you know, it's something that we really are very passionate about and really enjoy. And through doing this, we've gained some notoriety. We've been really fortunate with
I bet.
Yeah. So we've started getting inquiries from outside of Pittsburgh. And because of what we do with everything being local, you know, we have had to make some compromises here and there. But, you know, what we decided to do, and what you can get onto our website, it's wildpurveyorsmarket.com. And what we do now is we will sell and ship shelf-stable products. So we produce some, we produce some products in the store, like seasoned salts that we use wild ingredients in that are really nice. They're finishing salts. We do a couple of things that you can use to cure. We cure local trout in the store, like a salt cure or a gravlax, but with trout.
Right, sure.
So basically what we decided to do, at least currently, is we're not shipping anything perishable.
Mm-hmm.
But we do ship the seasoned salts. We have a sumac salt, which is really fantastic. It's great with fish. We also produce a lot of shrubs. Are you guys familiar with shrubs?
Yeah, very familiar with
shrubs. I love shrubs.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's more popular in certain parts of the country, but, you know, it's great for, when we originally started doing it, we just started to do it for, like, cocktails and sodas. But these days, we're using the shrubs in vinaigrettes in the store and whatnot.
Sure, I've used them in sauces.
Exactly, and for people that may not be familiar with what a shrub is, it's basically an infused vinegar. Basically, you're stabilizing, you're preserving a flavor. You can use anything, fruit, vegetables, what have you, preserving a flavor using acid and sugar.
Right.
Basically through vinegar. So it's an acidic product. You know, it has a little bit of a vinegar flavor, but like one of the first ones that we did was a blueberry shrub, and it's just, I mean, it's amazing.
That's been one of my favorite. Michelle and I think first discovered shrub. Maybe I might have been there first. I was on the board at one point and still very involved with in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, with the Pennsylvania College of Technology's culinary program. And I've done a couple of dinners over at Penn State Farm as well, because Pennsylvania happens to be one of my largest markets for my PBS series, which is Chef John Falls's Taste of Louisiana, which has been airing in Pennsylvania for, I would say, 20 years. So we have a great Pennsylvania following. But we discovered a shrub, and Michelle, you might have been there with me at the time.
I was, yeah.
And we had gone to do a dinner. I think it may have been at Penn State at the time.
It was, and Sam took us around that day.
Yeah, and Sam took us around one of our friends from there. And we went to a place that made all the different shrubs, and I just absolutely fell in love with it, started to search out the history of it. Came back to Louisiana, and you'll be interested in this, Kevin. I came back to Louisiana, and because of that, reading the story of Thomas Jefferson and the shrub, or the origination of those vinegars and all of that, came back to Louisiana and actually started to infuse wild Louisiana fruit into alcohols rather than vinegars to create what we call the Creole retifias. So it's contrary to the shrub in that the shrub is vinegar-based, as you mentioned, whereas ours is brandy-based. So we're infusing the same way with these beautiful colors like blueberry and strawberry and wild fruit. And I was inspired by the shrub of Pennsylvania. So it's amazing that you are. I can't wait to get, I'll have to get a bottle of yours just to make sure I have it.
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to send you guys down some. That was probably Tate Farm, I would imagine.
I think you're exactly right. That's what I think it was, Tate. Yeah, I think it was.
And that's funny that you mentioned that, too, because we've started to do the same thing. There's a few distilleries in the area that produce vodka and whiskey, and we've started making tinctures. The local cocktail community has really taken off around here, and a lot of them actually just went down there for the...
Tales of the cocktails, probably.
Yeah. And so we started producing a lot of... we're basically making tinctures out of wild ingredients to make bitters.
Right, sure. Wow. No, absolutely.
I feel a field trip coming.
Yeah, well, it seems that we have a lot. It seems that we have a lot in common. We started to actually bottle and produce our Creole retifias, which is about 25-28% alcohol, just by infusing, especially the bayou fruit, the wild persimmons, and of course the wild muscadines and these kind of grapes, but also the wild strawberries and blueberries that grow here. It's really interesting to be able to put all those flavors together, and now they're a part of our cocktail program at Restaurant Revolution, which is our new property in New Orleans, and that's kind of a lot of the stories that's being written about it now is this influence in our cocktail program. So I can't wait for you to come down and see what we're doing, and I guarantee you we will search you out next time because we do have a lot of love for Western Pennsylvania. I've done a lot of work there. I've spent a lot of time in your area. I know a lot of people from that area. I can't wait for us to come, Michelle and I. As we said, we have a field trip coming. We need to come see what you guys are doing, and we're going to welcome you our way as well.
John, you're exciting me. I mean, one of the things that's really great about getting to know nature and getting to know foraging is there's different things that grow everywhere. Really amazing. And some of the stuff that's growing down there, like the wild persimmons, where we get some up here, but they're different if it's a different strain. So, yeah, I would love to.
A few years ago, I actually made a little deal with the DeSalvos to send me a couple of crates of crab apples from up there, and I sent them a couple of crates of my wild mayhaws that grow in the swamps of Louisiana for them to play with their Italian food up in Latrobe. So we were moving fruit from the swamplands. Kevin, can you stay with us for just a minute? We won't take you much longer. We're going to take a quick little break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
More on the stories from National Public Radio News, as well as streaming audio at KRVS's website at krvs.org.
Hello, I'm Georges Collinet. Join me this week for Juju Jubilee. Juju masters King Sunny Ade and Ebenezer Obey tell us their stories. Classic tracks from the original vinyl, too. Remember vinyl? Well, all that next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Greetings. Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
A ginger swing with a pineapple heart. A coffee dessert, yes, you know it's good news. But you'll have to have them all pulled out after the Savoy drop pool.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And today we're very excited to have a new friend from Western Pennsylvania. And you know, we've been talking about everything except what we promised we were going to talk about truffles. And Kevin, I wanted to tell you, we do a lot of traveling around with food and television and radio and you name it, also our restaurant company. But I do some work with Blackberry Farm up in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I know you're familiar with those guys. And and Blackberry Farm, of course, not only has they're importing the truffle dogs now and breeding the truffle dogs, training those dogs at Blackberry Farm, but also, of course, just planting, I think, 500 trees and inoculating the root system with the truffle spores. So I know there's a lot of activity going on in the U.S. trying to get people's hands around that elusive ultimate, as I call it, gastronomy experience, the truffle.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about you and what y'all are doing and the truffles you're accessing and the foraging. And tell us a little bit about the truffle side of your business.
Basically, the black truffle is a winter truffle. And its season is early December to late January, early February, depending upon weather. So it's the exact same season in Europe as well. And we started working with truffles just basically at it fits in with our business. And where we do find some here in western Pennsylvania, they're different varieties that grow here. Not nearly as aromatic as the black truffle.
Right, sure.
Basically what everyone knows is the black truffle or the winter truffle is tuber melanosporum. It is also called the Perigord truffle. And it really can only be called Perigord truffle if it's from the Perigord region of France, just like champagne is not champagne unless it's from Champagne. But same genetics, tuber melanosporum. And we found out that, through research and whatnot, that it was being cultivated in the southern Appalachians. Their orchards, really, it's grown in association with certain varieties of oaks and different nut trees, hazelnuts being one.
And
it's actually kind of funny, I'll say real quick, none of the orchards, they don't harvest the nuts. They just harvest the truffle.
That's right.
I had a funny conversation one time when I asked if I could get some hazelnuts, too.
Yeah, well, that's Blackberry Farm said that it's the hazelnut trees that they inoculated. And I said, well, y'all going to have a great nut business. They said, well, we hope we have a great truffle business.
Right, exactly. Well, that's one of the things. It's like it's a huge investment for them to plant 500 trees. And I'm pretty sure that's probably only an acre.
It's a couple acres on the hillside. And they're only about 3 years old now, I guess.
They're like halfway into the period in which it takes 7 years for them to find out if it actually works.
Right, exactly.
It's a pretty tremendous, physical and financial investment to put in one of these orchards. But the rewards are great. I mean, it's the black truffle is known as one of the most expensive mushrooms in the world. So it's something that goes off of market pricing, whatever the market is bearing that year based on supply and demand. And this past year, a pound of truffles was going for $1,400,
wow.
I believe.
Right, about, yeah.
Yep, and the only other truffle that I'm aware of that's more expensive is the Alba truffle or the white summer truffle, which I think this past year was going for like $2,600 a pound. It's kind of crazy.
every time I walk through Revolution in New Orleans, our restaurant there that Rick Tramado and I own in New Orleans, and I walk through the kitchen and I see the truffles coming in and they're just mounded up on the counter right there. I stop for a moment and I look at it and I said, that probably costs more than opening my first restaurant in Donaldson.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, just one last question, because I know you're busy and I know y'all have to go. You have to go. But is there any truffle or like, I guess, a spore in America that has that unique fragrance or that unique ingredient taste that it adds that's comparable to certainly Perigord? We know that. That aroma and that flavor, that truffle, anything comparable, or is it all about regionality and using something from a region that in itself makes it interesting?
Well, truffles are kind of just like wine. If you've ever heard the term terroir,
right?
You know, it's taken on a lot of the environment around it, the soil, the earth, you know, and it really bears that flavor. So it is definitely regional, regionally specific. The only thing that I would say comparably that's native, the Burgundy truffle does grow native in the United States, and that, again, is something that grows in association with trees, just like the black truffle. The mycorrhizal mushroom, and basically it's a symbiotic relationship. It grows off of the root system, and through that relationship, it helps the tree to pull more nutrients out of the earth to be bigger, healthier, and in turn gives nutrients to the truffle for it to be able to fruit. But really, the only thing that I would say is prolific in the United States, which we mentioned earlier, is the black trumpet, has that really intense flavor. But yeah, I mean, it's one of the most unique things. It one of the questions that Marianette and I had talked about, like, how do we cook with them and how do we use them? Basically, like, I think the best thing, and you may have some thoughts on this as well, John. I think the best thing to do with them is it's one of those things that it marries really well with fat. So a lot of times what we do, and we sell it in the store, is we'll make right now we have black trumpet butter, but we make butters with it, and we sell that butter. So we make black truffle butter.
Right, or like foie gras terrines or something like that really picks up that beautiful aroma. And you're so right about that. It loves fat, and fat loves it, no doubt about it.
Yep.
The fact is, nothing's better than when I walk into the restaurant and I said, give me a little slice of that foie gras and slice some truffles on top of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kevin, let me just say this. We will have all of your information on our website for our listeners out there. And, of course, it's so wonderful to have you on. I do want to say that we love foraging ourselves. I mean, coming from the swamplands of Louisiana, where 40% of all of the wetlands of the U.S. is within our view.
Yeah.
Here, some of the old world forests, like Chico State Park, as it's called, is one of the arboretums that are thousands of acres of ancient forest that still has so much of exactly what we're always looking for in the And the folks who are there to assist as we walk through. I bring chefs there. I bring U.S. Culinary Olympic teams there. And I do a presentation that's kind of called From Swamp Floor to Table, The Origin of Flavor. And I would love to have you come in and spend a couple of days with us, be our guest, and come walk those forests with us and walk the swamplands and see some of these unique ingredients of the seven nations that created Creole. Meet Michelle, and she'll take you for her favorite snowball stand or something.
Oh,
and,
yes.
But anyway, this is a legitimate offer. I love Pennsylvania. The people of Pennsylvania have been so kind to Chef John Voss and company. You cannot imagine how many friends. It's our second home because we do have so many people who we love and love us from your area. And now we've just adding you to the list. So please take up my offer, and y'all come and be our guests, okay?
I will. That would be a great pleasure. I really appreciate it. It's been a huge pleasure talking with you guys today, and I look forward to seeing you guys up here. And definitely, I am definitely going to come down there. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you wrap up a couple of bottles of a shrub. I'm going to wrap up a couple of bottles of Retiefi, and we're going to cross them over in the mail, okay?
That sounds great.
All right, Kevin. You be safe, and tell your brother Tom I sent a hug, okay?
I will. Thank you, John.
Right,
thank
bye-bye.
You, Michelle.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was a great interview. He's a great guy, huh?
Oh, yeah. And what great and interesting work they do. And I can just picture Kevin sitting in his office and his brother calling, wanting to go foraging for mushrooms and thinking,
and he's like, yeah. Let's go do that. I'm done here.
And it's turned into a business. What a great entrepreneurial spirit,
yeah,
too.
No, exactly. I mean, it's tough work, and I admire them for what they're obviously doing there. Now, Michelle, what about books on the subject?
Yes, are,
tell us something for the library. As y'all all know, we challenge Michelle every week to go out and find the resources that you can add to your library, inexpensively, of course, to put on your bookshelves. And I'm always saying, if you just go and get one of the books we talk about every week, you'll add 4 books a month to your bookshelves, and before too long, you will have the greatest culinary library in the world, and not that expensive. I promise you that. So what do you have for us today?
Well, the first book I want to recommend is Taming the Truffle, The History, Lore, and Science of the Ultimate Mushroom, written by Ian Hall, Gordon Brown, and Alessandra Zambonelli. It's a beautifully illustrated book. Not only does it look great on the coffee table, but it's full of information. The authors take you through the history, the mystery of truffle hunting, truffle cultivation. They compare varieties of truffles, those in Italy, those in France, talk about their rarity, the value on the world market, which we've talked a little bit about today, which is incredible. The authors have a great sense of humor that I think you'll enjoy as well. So, great book. Another terrific book for your library is Field Guide to North American Truffles, Hunting, Identifying, and Enjoying the World's Most Prized Fungi, by Matt and James Trapp and Frank Evans. And, you know, kind of based on these two books, I'm finding that the truffle is such a fascinating subject, it takes 3 authors to cover it. You know, that was kind of interesting. It's a great book. It's a take-along book if you want to go foraging yourself, full-color illustrations. Great guide to identifying North American truffles and gives information on more than 80 species. The authors, interestingly, have also included flavor profiles. They include culinary tips and delectability index for each species. So really, really kind of interesting. The field guide is prefaced by a don't try this at home disclaimer, because the authors do want to warn that if you find what you think is a truffle before you sample it, just make sure it is by getting it analyzed by an expert.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But both of these books are great additions to your culture and culinary library. All the information will be on our website, jfolse.com.
All right. And Slama, what about our website? What's going on over there? Any interesting comments?
Yeah. Well, real quick, I just want to let our Stovehounds know and remind those faithful listeners about our digital footprint. We are on Facebook. We're at Stirring It Up Radio, and that's without a G. There, we got a really interesting post here. It looks like the author of Appetite for America, which is a book about the Fred Harvey concept.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
The Harvey's Girls. And
sure.
No, when we were doing we did
the Blue Plate special, sure.
Yeah. He just wanted to thank y'all for recommending his book, Appetite for America.
Look at that.
He says...
That was nice.
We have outreach, you see?
Yeah.
You see, Slama, you just think that we just have a studio here and we just come and talk to ourselves. We have listeners.
I had no idea. But he says, if you'd like to try any of the historic recipes by Fred Harvey chefs, they post one every day on their Harvey Girls cookbook page.
Hmm.
And he put the link on our page. So if you go check our Facebook.com/Stirring It Up Radio page, you can check that link out along with all our other stuff. And then real quick, I want to throw in a little recommendation to check out our archived page where all our podcasts for the year so far are available for free download.
Well, that's fantastic. Great, great, great. We also load up, as you know already, pictures. We just load up a group of pictures from our production of hams and picnic hams and bacon that we made from our heritage hogs. And I have just picked up 2 Wagyu calves. Of course, that's the Japanese beef that everybody hears about. We picked up two calves, so we're going to keep you. I think we loaded up pictures of them. They were just delivered about a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, we're adding them to the White Oak Farm with our pigs, our heritage breed chickens, and now we have Wagyu calves. So, and we're not raising a whole herd of these things. I mean, everything we do is two to three animals so that we can grow them and feed them the special diets we want. But anyway, I think it's interesting to find out that chefs are raising heritage breeds and we're feeding them certain things and working them in certain ways and then harvesting them to serve as programs in Restaurant Revolution, very humane system of doing things, and then letting our customers experience these things. So we look forward to keeping you posted on some of the breeds that we're bringing in. What about a quick recipe? Y'all want a quick recipe?
Yes.
What about truffle butter? Because you remember you said truffles love fat?
That's right.
And by the way, y'all, you can buy truffles. Be careful. A lot of the little black ones you see in the little bottles with little vinegar and water in them are really, you know, some downcast of a root mushroom of some kind. Not necessarily what we would consider a great truffle, but you know what? When in Rome or when in Downsonville in need, yeah, they do have a great aroma, and certainly there's a substitute if you just want butter. Anyway, 1.5 ounces of finely grated black truffle, and as I say, you can certainly buy it in some of the upscale markets. You can buy a truffle there for sure. The white truffle, as he said, $2,800 a pound. I think I'd stay away from those for a minute. And then I would use a cup of salted butter, just kind of bring the butter to room temperature, grate that 1/2 ounce of black truffle and mix it well into the butter. And once it's mixed well into the butter, then you go ahead and put it in either a container wrapped real tight or a lid press real tight and allow it to sit. A lot of people will take the butter and melt it, put the truffles in it, and kind of simmer the truffles in it for a little while to infuse that flavor, and then take it out and chill that butter again, and just use periodically to enhance things, a nice piece of meat over a steak, a nice piece of fish, whatever. Very simple to do. And I will have this along with other truffle recipes on our website, jfalls.com. And just go on to the radio section. You're going to find it all. Y'all, thank you so much for being here with us. And as Michelle said, don't go dig it up and eat it and thinking you have the right thing. You may have the wrong thing. Anyway, y'all, we'll see you later. Be safe out there.